The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
If you are passionate about food and how it supports well-being and health, learn more. The Institute for Optimum Nutrition has been training nutritional therapists for 35 years on its highly acclaimed and accredited diploma courses. Start your new career in nutritional therapy, one that will make a difference and help others achieve their health goals. Train with the home of nutritional therapy education. Find us online and give us a call or click on the IOM banner on the UK Health Radio homepage.
Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio, the show that's all about integrative medicine for cancer, the broadest, most inclusive way of looking at and treating cancer. My name's Robin Daly and I'm the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that's been involved for the last 15 years in helping people with cancer to understand and access integrative medicine. As the years go on, more and more is recognised and understood regarding the intimate connection, or indeed the indivisibility, of mind and body. Someone who takes a keen interest in this subject, and about the physical steps we can take to support mental health, is nutritionist, lecturer and author Ray Griffiths. He's about to publish a new book on the subject, so I'm taking this opportunity to talk to him over the phone to find out more. It's been a lot too long since we last spoke. Great to have you on the Yes Live show.
Thank you very much. Good to speak to you.
So there's plenty we can talk about, as you've been involved in nutritional science for many years and you've done a lot of thinking about mitochondrial problems, including cancer. But the excuse for this particular interview is that you have a new book out on a very specific topic. It's called Depression, the Mind-Body, Diet and Lifestyle Connection. So it's not cancer-specific in itself, but in my experience, depression looms all too large in many people's experience when they get a diagnosis, while they're going through grueling treatments, and often for years after the treatment's over as well. So it's a big topic. Your book title implies that factors other than strictly psychological ones play into depression. If you were to put a kind of tabloid headline figure on the percentage that could be affected by changes in diet and lifestyle, what do you think that figure might be?
I think that 100% of us are affected by diet and lifestyle all the time.
Really?
And there's this artificial divide between the mind and the body hides this from us. I mean, many of us are going through tough times, stressful situations, and then we eat all the wrong things, and our mood changes when we eat all the wrong things or when we're excessively stressed. So I think all of us at some stage in our lives will be affected by our diet and lifestyle, and this is becoming more apparent as time goes on. This is becoming more apparent that divide now is breaking down, and we're starting to realise that to have a good sense of well-being, you have to have a brain that's functioning really well, that's got plenty of energy, that has reduced inflammation. All these things are really important to keep us feeling well. I almost see it like a racing car, that like someone like Lewis Hamilton, he's the driver, but he needs a decent car to be able to get him through the race. And our brain needs to be fed with the best foods, have the best friends, the best family, the best environment. They're all needed to keep this brain functioning. And yeah, it does affect us badly if we start to not look after it.
Mm-hmm. All right, great answer. Thank you. So by way of a bit of an introduction to listeners who don't know anything about you, would you like to tell us what brought you into this field in the first place and give a little brief outline of your work up to date?
My own introduction, there's lots of levels. There's difficulties in childhood with fatigue. I got involved in motorcycle racing and I bashed my head around quite a bit.
Oh dear.
Really fascinated by brain function because that affected me badly. And then with continuing fatigue and relationship problems, I started to study at the Institute of Doctrine of Nutrition, then went on to study a lot of biochemistry with regard to Richard Holding, and then studied for a degree, a master's degree, with Kate Mills College in Wokingham, CNELM.
All right, yeah.
I've got a master's degree in personalised nutrition through Kate's College in Wokingham. I also lecture at that college, same college, in cancer and nutrition. I've been lecturing for about the last 12 years in cancer and nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have three books out now. The first one was last year on mitochondria, the power packs that feed all our cells, including our brain. It's so important in our brain. And in cancer, these are necessary to give us energy, but also to trigger cells to undergo apoptosis or program cell death. So mitochondria play a huge role in first of all protecting us against cancer and also helping to get rid of tumor cells as well.
Mm.
The second book's on Parkinson's disease, that came out earlier this year. And
okay.
The third one on depression is coming out in September.
Right, you've been pumping them out.
Well, the Parkinson's one has been about 5 years in the making. It's my,
oh, I see.
My dissertation for my master's degree was on Parkinson's disease and how mitochondrial dysfunction is a problem with Parkinson's.
Mm.
And it's a problem with depression, that when we lose energy to the brain and undergoing chemotherapies, we're really going to have a heavy impact on the brain and mitochondria. And,
yes.
And as you say, it's a big problem for people going through these heavy aggressive treatments to try and heal them. But the fallout to the brain is it makes it quite difficult for cognitive function and sense of well-being.
Mm. Well, rather in the way you said that, you know, the artificial division between mind and body is beginning to crumble a bit these days. Also, there's kind of artificial division between these different kinds of chronic diseases beginning to look a bit hazy because, of course, you know, when you get down to it, the root problems are so similar in so many of them, aren't they?
Yes, they are. I mean, I like to see it as more of a continuum rather than this divide that you say, like between cancer and other diseases. If you look at many of the chronic inflammatory diseases, there's a continuum between all of them and a much higher risk of cancer. If you've got type 2 diabetes,
right,
arthritis, heart disease, colitis or irritable bowel syndrome, all these inflammatory conditions give a person a much higher risk of cancer. And it's frightening to think that, but also it means that we can do things about it too, that we can intervene in inflammatory conditions much earlier and know that we're protecting ourselves against cancer down the line.
Yes, yes. The upside of this information, eh?
Yes, yes. It's if you see things as a continuum, I think the idea that everything's about just purely about mutations and bad luck, there's not much you can do about that. But if you see it more as a continuum and looking at making diet and lifestyle changes when things start to go amiss, then you start to rein things in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's one little thing I'd like to get out of the way before we go on, and that is that the cover of your book has got a picture of a seahorse on it. Would you like to elaborate?
Yes, that's the... I just thought that was so evocative. We have a hippocampus in our brain, which is it's the Greek word for seahorse, and I just love the way that this seahorse shaped part of the limbic system exists in our brain. And during depression, this part of our brain shrinks or atrophies, and it's linked to depression and the difficulty of depression. And interestingly, antidepressant drugs can help inhibit the shrinkage of the hippocampus.
Right.
And what also I find really fascinating is that the hippocampus is one of the few parts of the brain that can regrow through neurogenesis, that the cells within the hippocampus can regrow. So by aiming a lot of therapy at how can we help the hippocampus regrow and regenerate could be supportive ways to protect people and help them recover from depression.
Mm. Okay, well, that's something I'm sure we're going to hear more about as we go on today. So the first thing I'd like to look into with you is the direct links between depression and the actual inception of chronic diseases such as cancer. There have long been reports of cancer commonly following a couple of years after a traumatic loss, say, such as the death of a partner or a child.
Yes.
And there's also about the links between low mood and reduced immunity. So where are we now with the science behind this kind of association?
I'm really fascinated, and I have to thank Sue Canvert in Inviva Clinical for this, for highlighting the parasympathetic vagal nerve connection to lots of health and disease. So we do know that people with cancer can be supported, they can slow their tumour growth down if they take beta blockers, for instance.
Right.
There seems to be an excessive sympathetic nervous system activity, so that's the fight or flight nervous system activity. It has a very strong connection with the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest, repair, regenerate, relaxation part of the nervous system, the parasympathetic part, appears to be protective against cancer. So if someone has experienced a tremendous amount of stress, their fight or flight may be too activated, which may be making them more at risk of, say, tumor growth, and the parasympathetic driving the vagal nerve, which calms us down and also reduces inflammation, might be, they call it like a tank. The vagal tank may be running low because of the trauma that you've experienced. And so this rest, relaxation, and reparative, regenerative part of the nervous system may be just too low after the trauma sound experience.
Mm.
So I think that's a fascinating link, that not only does it calm a nervous system down, it calms the immune system down. There's even links to our mitochondria giving us energy in our brain from this relaxation part of the nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system.
Mm.
I think that's a possible interesting avenue to explore.
Mm. Okay.
And the way that some people suggest seeing how well this part of the nervous system is working is using a heart rate variability. There's a monitor you can use to get some feedback, biofeedback, just to see how well sympathetic nervous system is working. And if you are feeling stressed, you can use it to help calm you down. But you can also do meditation or yoga as well if you wanted to.
Yes. Yeah, so are these the kind of things that people are using for, like, dealing with their blood pressure?
The heart rate machine, you mean?
Just by kind of feedback, people are able to actually learn how to control their own blood pressure.
See, I think a lot of people, so this heart rate variability is just looking at the quality of your heartbeat. It's not whether the blood pressure is high or low, and if the more variable the heartbeat is, you're more in this rest and repair parasympathetic activity.
Oh, I see.
And it's something that is a visual feedback, and people may not realise after a trauma, someone may not realise that they're too much in their sympathetic nervous system. They may not realise they've become so used to being stressed.
Yes.
It seems perfectly normal.
Yeah.
And so they're on these treadmills. That kind of biofeedback can help them. But just getting out into, just going for a walk, being in the countryside, being with people you love being with, just taking time, singing, dancing, laughing, crying, all these things can activate this vagal nerve to drive this calming part of a nervous system, which will then have an impact on our immune system and help protect us from cancer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, those are all things I want to hear a bit more about as we go on. But I want to start off by going straight into diet, because it's increasingly implicated in every sort of chronic problem, including mental health. We've talked about the science behind depression as a causative factor in disease. Can you now talk about the overview of the established science behind nutrition as a means to counter depression once you have it?
One of the big things that we eat too many simple carbohydrates, we eat too much sugar frequently, and if we're down, we might resort to having a sugar binge.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the worst things you can do, both for cancer and for by depression. The hippocampus, that seahorse-shaped part of the limbic system, that's really important in that, in our mood and sense of well-being. It really struggles in the face of us eating sugar.
Does it?
And it depends on glucose, but it also is something called insulin resistance, which can mean that if you have too much sugar in your diet, you can't get enough glucose into the hippocampus, and that can then struggle to maintain its function properly. And can we know, I think there was a study at UCL that looked at men who were drinking the equivalent of a couple of cans of Coke every day for mm-hmm. 5 years, and those people became depressed because of their sugar level, not because they were not having sugar because they were depressed, but because the sugar was driving the depression. Mm-hmm. So we do know that's a problem. We also know that sugar is a problem in cancer.
Of course.
Drive the proliferative cycle in our cells and exacerbate or drive cancer too. So definitely sugar is one of the big ones to avoid when dealing with depression and cancer.
Mm.
Also a junk food diet, that's keep well away from that. The quality of the food is so poor that it will drive inflammation, which can be a big factor in cancer. That there's something called the dietary inflammatory index, where you can look at the index and just see where the foods you're eating are on this scale. And if it's inflammatory, it will increase the chances of depression, it will increase the chances of cancer or drive proliferation too. So the first thing to do is just cut out the junk and cut out the sugar.
Right.
Then eat as many fruits and vegetables as you can. That's a really important thing to do. Many compounds within fruits and vegetables that are protective to the brain and also protective against cancer. So that's really exciting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There are concerns about taking antioxidants if people are on chemotherapy, but there's plenty of plant compounds in fruits and vegetables which are really, really protective.
Mm. So exactly the same advice for tackling the fact you have cancer as the fact you're depressed. So that's as good.
Yes, there's things like luteolin that's in celery, it's in chamomile tea, it's in lavender, there's rutin. So it's fascinating. Rutin is part of many fruits and vegetables. It's interesting that St. John's wort, that herbal antidepressant, doesn't have any antidepressant activity if you take the rutin out of it. So
oh, really?
That's really interesting. There's lots of these antioxidant compounds within plants that are protective and will help repair particularly the hippocampus and other parts of the brain, but also will act to protect against cancer too. So they will drive apoptosis, that thing we talked about earlier about mitochondria helping to break down tumour cells.
Yes. So there's lots of different sources of depression and maybe even types of depression that are associated with cancer. There's certainly lots of different reasons for getting depressed, ranging from ones which are purely psychological to ones which are actually driven by chemicals. So does the advice as to what to do about it vary, or is it always the same?
I think that although there's several different causes, I think the advice is very similar. There is one concern that the growth factors, that these things called neurotrophins, and in people, these neurotrophins, there's one called nerve growth factor, there's brain-derived neurotrophic factor, there's glial-derived neurotrophic factor. These neurotrophins help to repair the brain, and we need them to protect us against depression, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, dementia, to keep our brain working. But the trouble is, in some cancers, not all of them, in some cancers, they may be increased. So this is a fine line we have to tread, that we want to protect the brain, but we also make sure we're not driving tumour growth as well.
Yes.
That's always a difficulty, and you always have to err on the side not driving the tumour growth, because that's just definitely protect against. And I would really recommend, if anyone's doing anything, is to, or working with a practitioner, is that you check the scientific research for everything for that particular tumour and take into account what chemotherapy they're on, because we want, don't want to do any harm. We want to be able to protect the person from further tumour growth. But yes, we do want to help protect them from depression too, but not at the expense of increasing tumour growth.
Mm. Makes complete sense. So this is something that's quite cancer specific, you're saying then. It'll apply with some kinds of cancer and also some kinds of treatment.
Yes, completely individual. So the brain-derived neurotrophic factor and the nerve growth factor to be increased in many cancers. So I think the safe option is the fruit and vegetable extract. Some of the polyphenols that I've mentioned are great, because not only do they help repair the brain, but they also act as mild chemotherapy agents themselves. They reduce inflammation. There's a transcription factor called, am I able to say that, a transcription factor, NF-kappa B.
Mm-hmm.
It's a compound which has been found to drive inflammation in our cells, and this compound is raised in all cancers. It's raised in chemo resistance. It's raised in depression. So one of the great things about these many, many plant compounds, curcumin from turmeric, catechin from green tea, resveratrol, many of these compounds will suppress NF-kappa B, which will help protect us from depression. It will help reduce cancer growth, and it will also help chemotherapy drugs work better. So I think that's a really good avenue to follow.
Mm. Right. Okay. So just, I want to be absolutely clear. It sounds like you're supporting the use of whole plant, either plant or whole plant extracts rather than isolated substances. Is that correct?
I think that's the safest for me that is to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would generally do. I probably worked with about 20 or 30 people with cancer, supported them, not never say treated, but supported them.
Yes.
With their process, and yes, it's working. I tend to work with whole plant compounds if I am working with them, because I want to make sure that I'm not undermining the chemotherapy at all.
Yes.
For example, if you might think it's a good idea to take folate or folic acid, because that's been shown to be very people have reduced levels in depression, but many chemotherapy drugs are antifolate. They right. block the action of folic acid to help reduce proliferation. So these are some of the come up against. So if you're trying to deal with one issue, but then it might exacerbate another.
Yes. Yeah, it's quite tricky. So do I take it then that though your book sets out the territory, in terms of getting personal information about what to do in an individual situation, it sounds like expert advice is definitely in needed.
I would always err on the side of expert advice. I mean, particularly if it's something like cancer, there's always that something that you or a person or family might not come across. And if at all possible, have an oncologist that's supportive of the work that you're doing. I mean, it's very difficult sometimes that with this divide between nutrition and medicine, sometimes if both sides are not really working together. But if you can get an oncologist on side that can hear what you're attempting to do, then I believe that they can be offering some good advice.
Mm.
And protect yourself as well, because you definitely can make mistakes. And I've written a book about depression and not with cancer in mind.
Yeah, of course.
So I really think it's really important that if some of those ideas within the book, and I'm really aware that many of the ideas in the book could be supportive for someone with depression undergoing chemotherapy, I still think it's important to have an expert on board as well, to be able to filter through things and make important calls if something doesn't make sense.
Yeah. All right. I'm really glad we went into that because, of course, most of the listeners to this show are people who are interested in cancer. So very important. All right. So clearly you're saying there's a lot available on the dietary front which people can do to support themselves in good mental health or actually help get themselves back from being rather depressed. Now I'd like to sort of broaden things out a bit because you have mentioned lots of other things that people could be doing which would also help these other lifestyle factors that are mentioned in the title. So can we have a little bit of a look at this sort of give us a list to start with.
So I mentioned earlier on about the part of the nervous system, the parasympathetic nervous system that runs when we're relaxed, when we're rested, when we're enjoying life. And this part of the nervous system is sensitive to all our senses. So when we're with people we love being with, so that you've heard of hormone oxytocin, well, when we're with people we love being with, this will drive the parasympathetic nervous system and it will be a healing process. When we're around people we love, mm-hmm. friends we care about, we start to undergo regenerative processes which are anti-inflammatory. When we're out in the country, when we're walking, when we're near the sea, when we're near animals, if we're walking a dog, if we're singing, if we're laughing, crying, all these things are really regenerative for our body and our brain. And it makes sense. We kind of, I think we've dismissed these things and seen them as a bit hippie-like in the past.
Yeah.
But as we understand the connection to our senses and how and nervous system that picks up all these experiences and translates them to a reduction of inflammation, I think that's a exciting avenue.
Right. I totally agree.
There's a researcher, I think he calls it the polyvagal theory, and so you're activating as many different parts of the vagal nerve through these different processes can be really healing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's definitely something that you can take a multi-pronged approach to. Would it be fair to say that if you get all of these resources together, that diet still would come at the top of the list, would be the first thing that you would aim to address with somebody?
I think diet is incredibly important. I really like the Mediterranean diet. Because not just the components of it, which I think are really protective against depression and against cancer, but also the Mediterranean diet, the definition of the United Nations definition of Mediterranean diet includes community, eating with friends and family.
Is that right?
Preparing the food with friends and family. Mm. The community, the sociability is all part of that diet. And they even go as far as suggesting that you buy your crockery locally, that you buy your food locally, that you buy your glasses locally. So it's an immersive experience. So it's not just the food, you're also nourishing yourself with friends, family, and the environment. And I think that's such an important part. We tend to, particularly in this country, just think about, I'm just eating the food because it's good for me. It's just these nutrients are good for me. But without thinking about the process of immersing ourselves in eating together, that sociability is incredibly important.
Mm. Well, that's very interesting. I certainly didn't know that about the United Nations description. That's news. Diet's very important. And with the other things you've mentioned, I've taken note of the fact that in the media recently there have been some quite interesting statistics coming out about the importance of these social connections. You know that both your position amongst your friends and society, and also your intimate connections, that those things actually can affect the length of your life much more than all the more common things that are pointed to, like smoking and all the rest of it. You know, if you have very poor relations, you're likely to have a very short life.
Yes, it's really fascinating that when we're around people that are quite negative, bullying, aggressive towards us, the brain starts to inflame. There's a lot of tests that have been tried out on laboratory animals initially, and see that when an animal's bullied, the brain starts to inflame and can lead to mood disorders and perhaps depression. And that's just by being treated badly. So if someone's being brought up in a really negative atmosphere, then their brain's really going to be affected as they grow up.
Mm. Well, that's very interesting, because that kind of thing, of course, can affect a whole nation. You can have a bullying regime in charge of a nation. It must have an effect, presumably, on everybody.
Yes, if you're in a totalitarian regime, that must have a really negative effect. And I know in the laboratory animals, if it carries on for a certain period of time, there's this learned helplessness where they become so suppressed in every part of their life that they feel unable to fight their way back and defend themselves.
Yeah, that's a very kind of complete loss of power, I think, is something that must affect health
very deeply.
You can
see, as you say, in a whole nation, is that, and so those people are going to be experiencing increased levels of inflammation, which will, again, like interleukin 6 seems to be the one. It's an immune system hormone, effectively, interleukin 6. It's called a cytokine. And when people are treated badly, interleukin 6 goes up. And interleukin 6 is increased in cancer, in depression, and autoimmunity as well. So definitely the way people are treated. So when someone says, "Will you stop that? You're doing my head in," they definitely are.
Right, they mean it.
They definitely are.
Yeah. Well, quite often, there's quite a lot of talk of people radically changing their life when they get cancer. That's one of the things it can prompt. But it seems to be something that very often is quite a broad description, which includes maybe changing their lifestyle and their diet and these kind of things. But it also refers quite often to toxic relationships, for example, or toxic work situations, and people just saying, "That's it, I'm not going on with that." And that seems to be very important that happens.
It does. You definitely hear of many, many people deciding that they don't want to be around those people anymore. And if you say they're toxic relationships, and if you feel that way, if you do feel that way, then they are. And we have to take note of that. In a way, we thought all these terms were metaphorical.
Right.
About things, about how it breaks my heart, and you're doing my head in, you're a pain in the neck, and all these things we thought were metaphorical. Actually, they're quite literal as we understand the science more.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so one other subject that comes up all the time in relation to more and more things, and I bet it comes up in relation to this topic, is the gut and the gut flora and the microbiome. Is this something that you talk about in your book?
Yes, there's a chapter on the gut-brain axis, and again, working through this vagal nerve, the brain is really sensitive through the vagal nerve up into the brain, and from the gut to the brain, and there's a lot of traffic that goes from the gut to the brain. One of the scary things in Parkinson's, for example, is the thought that there may even be some of these damaged proteins that cause Parkinson's may actually start in the gut,
right,
and transfer up from the gut through the vagus nerve into the brain. But it communicates with inflammatory brain cells called microglia, and if the gut's inflamed, if the microvata is imbalanced, is experiencing dysbiosis, that can drive these microglia in the brain to move from a more passive form of microglia, these resident macrophages of the brain, into a more inflammatory form, and that can drive depression too. So people can have inflamed guts or imbalanced microbiota, and that could be then driving communication up through the vagal nerve into the brain and increasing the chances of depression.
Mm. So this is a very direct way in which modern lifestyle, it affects the microbiome enormously in the form of all sorts of food additives, rather denatured food, loads of chemicals in the environment, antibiotics, yeah. All the rest of it. You know, there's a million and one ways in which the microbiome is under attack, basically, with modern lifestyles. So you would yeah. say there's a connection between that and how much we're depressed.
Yes, there's definitely a connection between the gut and how our mood is. For example, I know that I can't eat pasta, which is a personal experience. If I have pasta, within, I'd say about half an hour,
yeah,
my mood, a slightly black cloud descends over me.
Really?
And then for a day or two, I feel really depressed. And then usually about day two is a bowel movement, and this black cloud just goes.
Right.
So because I'm really sensitive to that kind of wheat in pasta, it must be that gut-brain axis, because it clears instantaneously when it's all passed through my system.
Mm.
So I really, really notice a difference.
Yeah.
And we're now understanding more and more, and I know in vivo clinical are really looking at this more and more, looking at the kind of foods that we eat and the influence of the microbiome as well. So they're developing lots of supplement extracts to encourage the right kind of beneficial bacteria in our gut.
Mm. So for people with cancer, of course, they've got a uniquely difficult situation for the microbiome, in as much as they're often getting chemotherapy, which is, if you want to clean out your microbiome, that's a pretty good way of doing it. And then in between having the chemo, they usually get an infection that hasn't been really diagnosed properly, and they're given a raft of antibiotics to do away with it. So the combination of those two is kind of like, well, you're lucky if you've got a microbiome after all that. So it must be particularly important to do something to maintain it.
We do know that probiotics are also protective against depression as well. That they can really help make a better connection between the gut and the brain again, and reduce inflammation in the brain. So we do know that certain probiotics can help, but certain lactobacillus species and bifidobacteria species can really help reduce that inflammation.
Right.
Could be an option.
Yeah, it sounds like a bit of a must for people who are having to go through chemotherapy to look at what they can do to sustain their gut health.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I think, again, we need to look at each person individually to... I'm always nervous about making sweeping statements about what people should and shouldn't do without looking at the individual and taking into account every single part of their circumstances.
Right. Fair enough. Okay, so... We've talked about a lot of different things you could do about depression, but I'm assuming you'd advise employing some or all of these strategies in addition to more traditional psychological support.
Yeah, I don't want to take away or undermine psychological support in any way. In fact, my partner's a psychotherapist, so I agree with that.
Okay.
We're understanding that there's so much more to the way the brain works and protecting the brain than just our psychological experiences. And in fact, they just cross over. Again, I think it's continuums again, that you can't split the two.
Right.
You may have had these, science may have gone through this Cartesian divide in the 16th century. But we're now trying to move back towards reuniting the mind and body again. And I think Ed Bulmer, have you read Ed Bulmer's book, The Inflamed Mind?
No, I've not heard of it.
Have you read that? Ed Bulmer is a bestseller, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He talks in the book a lot about this divide between the mind and the body, and as a psychiatrist himself, how he's struggled to bring the two together. but as inflammation has been seen to be an important part of depression, and people on antidepressants, only about half the people on antidepressants get any benefit from those drugs.
Mm.
And they're starting to see that inflammation may be one of the reasons why these antidepressants just aren't working as well as they could. So just looking at people's depression, we could be looking at how we can bring in various dietary factors to help some of these antidepressants work better. I mean, they're more, we now understand they're more than just trying to increase serotonin. Definitely they do far more than that. And that means that we can bring in lots of these plant compounds to work alongside them if necessary.
Right. And it's fair to say, isn't it, that you say that the dividing line is disappearing between mind and body. And you've been talking about the ways in which the physical can affect the mental. And it's also true the other way, of course, is that, I mean, everybody knows if you get a sudden gulp moment, that you get that sort of acid thing happens in your stomach or whatever, you know, that's a very physical reaction to something you've seen or heard or whatever. So presumably approaching the problem from both ends like that, from both the psychological and the physical, makes the most sense, really.
Yes, it does. It's two-way. The vagal nerve I talk about, it's 80% going from our senses and the brain and the 20% going the other way. So it's a two-way street, as you just said.
Right.
Our macrophages, our immune cells in the gut, are really sensitive to the way we're feeling. So we do know that people with inflammatory bowel disease, for instance, will have emotion experiences which are being translated through the immune system, through the nervous system, into our gut. You see that with irritable bowel syndrome, colitis, inflammatory bowel disease. You see this increase in the people experience being translated into their body.
Interesting. But it's 20% from the mind to the body, 80% the other way.
That's what the vagus nerve from the gut and the brain, the vagus nerve.
I see.
Is that? I'm not sure about other ways of connecting between the mind and body and the body and mind. In my book, I call it psychosomatic and somapsychic. We accept psychosomatic, but the idea that things are somapsychic, we're picking up through our senses and experiences and translating them to our psyche. And then back to our body again. It's continually going backwards and forwards. It's not one way or the other.
Right. Very interesting. All right. Well, look, we're getting towards the end. Maybe you want to tell people about when your book's available, where it's available, what it costs.
Yes, my book, Depression, the Mind, Body, Diet and Lifestyle Connection, is out on September 3rd. It's available in paperback. And also on Kindle as well. So it should be available in all bookshops and on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting an Audible version of it as well. If people want to listen to it on Audible, there'll be an Audible version.
Great.
On the 20th of September, I'm also presenting at a nutritional psychiatry summit in London. I think it's the Gloucester Hotel in London. And that's mainly for nutritionists, talking about mitochondria and depression and how to support mitochondria to help protect against depression. So that's on September 20th.
You've always got some practitioners listening, so I'm sure that'll be of interest to somebody. All right. Well, great topic. Thank you very much for exploring that with me, Ray. Lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, Ray.
You can pre-order Ray's book ready for September 3rd when it comes out, and as he mentioned, it's a modest £8.99. I hope you found today's show interesting and useful. This is a subject we could all do well to be aware of. Please make a point of joining me again next week for another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.